Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode of Money Diaries is brought to you by Intuit. Proud makers of TurboTax, QuickBooks, and Mint. It doesn't matter if you're self-employed, thinking about starting a side hustle, or just trying to get the most out of your money. Intuit has tools that help you achieve prosperity, whatever that means for you. Easy-to-navigate software like QuickBooks, TurboTax, and Mint help you take control of your finances so you can prosper. Learn more at Intuit.com. Intuit, powering prosperity. This is Money Diaries, the podcast. I'm Lindsay Stanberry.
And I'm Paco de Leon.
And this is the podcast where people call in to talk about the weird issues they're having with money.
Today, we are talking about these high freaking earners and these high freaking spenders. Take me out to sushi, you guys. Take me out to lunch.
Paco, it's our last episode.
Woo woo!
So today we're talking to a woman we're calling Maria. She's 28 and she's married and lives in Virginia and is making with her husband like over $200,000.
Cha-ching.
Which is really impressive.
She's a little scared about the stock market and investing and that whole universe of weirdness. So we are going to do our best to talk her through it.
It's nerdy.
Super nerdy.
And it's scary.
They make it scary so that you freak out and then you pay them high fees. That's what it is.
So for this episode, everybody needs their notebook.
You might want to get one of those clicky pens that has the different colors.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, you could color code this.
It's a freaking money party.
Because we're all going to get rich, right?
Yeah.
Let's get her on the line. Hey, Maria. It's so great to have you on the podcast today.
Great to be here.
We wanted to kick things off with you telling us a little bit about your background.
Okay. I am a communications professional. I live in the DC area. I'm 28 years old.
And you're married, right?
Yes.
How much is your joint salary?
I make $113,000, and together our salary is about $210,000. Being comfortable probably is sort of a new feeling, because buying a house, you know what, we went from paying $1,900 a month for rent that we shared to paying like $3,000 plus, you know, another $500 in utilities. So it kind of doubled our housing costs. And so that's sort of rattling, and then resettling and figuring out your spending habits differently from there.
And can you talk a little bit about your background? Did you grow up thinking about money?
I definitely grew up learning to be frugal. My parents had twins when I was 8 years old, and that really hit their budget pretty hard, because I think they were planning on one kid, and they had a bunch of medical issues when they were younger. TRICARE for military families is really great, but it did kind of put a damper on their money situation. So they followed Dave Ramsey's thing with the envelopes,
right,
where you take out the cash that you have for your groceries.
They actually did the physical envelopes.
Right, the physical envelopes.
Wow.
With physical cash. And
amazing.
It was like, you know, this is groceries, this is dining out. And so as a kid, that made a really big impression, because when you see that there were $5 in the grocery envelope, you don't whine about wanting, you know, granola bars or candy, because it's like,
sure,
well, yeah, we have to get milk for the babies.
Right. Very transparent.
Like, I remember like being 6 and 7, and going to McDonald's and getting a Happy Meal was like the treat of the week, because it meant we were like going somewhere other than home. And so that's not like growing up poor. We were definitely never in need in any way. Just like, this is the entertainment for the week, is your $5 food in a box.
Do you practice the envelope method today?
No, fortunately, that was just a short time for my family, and they kind of got out of their hole of debt, et cetera. And I haven't had that problem since probably college, when I had to work full time, you know, and pay bills, and I was just breaking even.
So how did you go from breaking even in college to where you are now? It's really impressive.
I got a head start in college by taking a lot of AP courses in high school. So I skipped out on a year of undergrad, finished my undergrad in 3 years with no debt, and I did that by working full-time throughout my college career.
Dang.
I used to clean houses in college. Like, I spent about 20 hours a week cleaning houses independently for cash. You know, traded every spare hour for, well, I could pick up more night hours at the call center, or I could clean so-and-so's house because I know she's free Tuesday afternoons. And so maybe that was probably the turning point for me. You know, when you're a teenager, you're a kid, you live at home and you don't really see how other people live. But once I was in these people's homes, sometimes they were just laying in bed, like watching TV. They just didn't feel like cleaning their house. And I was like, that's such a cool thing, is like, I would rather do this, or, you know, I'm going to go to my son's baseball game or whatever instead of, you know, cleaning, which has to be done, but I can pay you to do it and then I can go spend my time elsewhere. Very different than how I was raised.
Do you think that was a motivator for you in trying to find a career that would pay well?
It absolutely was. And I went to college originally for journalism. And then realized pretty quickly that journalists don't really make any money. And I was like, I definitely want to write because I love writing, but I don't think I want to get paid nothing, and I don't want to have to fight to do my job. And so the opposite side is public affairs or public relations, and that pays pretty well, and I still get to do lots of writing. So,
okay, so you left journalism for the dark side. Sorry, that's a joke. And then what?
Then I was offered a graduate student assistantship for my master's degree, and so that paid for the tuition, and then I worked full-time on top of the assistantship to pay for bills, etc. So by the time I was 23, I had a master's degree and no debt, and I've negotiated my salary progressively as I've gone through my career.
Was there like a specific thing that happened, or like did you ever notice like a specific feeling that you had when you were comfortable? For me, when we stopped being poor, the signal to me was when I was at the grocery store, and it was like, oh, you could buy that butter all the time and it's fine. Did you have something like that?
I definitely felt that within the first couple of months after I renegotiated my salary, and it jumped about 30%. And that was kind of a, you know, buzz to the head. That jump was like, you know, I can eat out or like go to a bar with friends and like buy someone a drink. That's magical.
I'm curious to know, how did you get your salary? How did you renegotiate a 30% increase?
As a federal employee, I had a security clearance. And it's actually kind of a niche market to be a communicator with a security clearance. I was in a job and wasn't super duper happy as a government contractor. And I had received another offer for maybe like a 10% raise. And I was going to like the work more. There was more room for growth. And so I talked it over with my husband and my dad, who are both my kind of career coaches whenever I want to bounce ideas. And they were both like, all right, well, it sounds like you really want this other job. My husband was like, don't go in there and quit without a counteroffer number. And I was like, what? That's crazy talk. And I was like, I want this other job. I want to go do this other thing. And he said, what number would make you stay? And I was like, $25,000 more. That would make me stay. And he was like, well, then make that your number. I called him, and he lived on the West Coast, and I worked here in D.C. And I called the owner, and I said, you know, I've been offered this other job. And he was like, well, what would it take to make you stay? Because we don't want the seat to sit empty, and it's going to be really hard to find someone with your credentials. And I threw out a number, and he was like, well, that would make you one of the highest paid people on this contract. Like, I don't know if I can do that. And over a 30-minute conversation, he was like, okay, sure. And so he gave me the money, and I hung up, and I was like, can you believe what just happened?
You're a badass.
I was just at home.
Yeah, that is so impressive.
Thank you.
That's awesome. So what questions do you have for us today?
I'm finally at a place where I feel comfortable talking about investing and looking into additional money options for myself.
Coming up next,
how do people do stock market?
How do people do stock market?
That's after the break.
I have a friend getting married this year, and I found myself overspending on her wedding from the minute she asked me to be a bridesmaid. I spent $75 on our celebratory ramen lunch. Let's not even get started on the cost of the bridesmaid's dress, the bachelorette party, the bridal shower, the hotel, the list goes on. Let's take a moment to talk about your financial goals. It doesn't matter if you run your own business or just trying to get the most out of your money. Intuit's products help you effortlessly manage your finances so you can plan for your future. Learn more at Intuit.com. Intuit, powering prosperity.
So tell us about how you see financial growth. What does that mean to you?
Financial growth to me is like, you know, you just progressively get better, like your net worth line should go upwards, right? So I don't think I've really thought specifically or had any, you know, investment goals. I know that putting money away on the regular so that it can earn interest, like your 401k, et cetera. I know we could definitely do more and that there are other opportunities. I just don't know a whole lot about them. The thing I've always been curious about, and, you know, we've talked about it as a couple too, is like, how do people do stock market? What is stock market? Is it a thing that normal people can make money on?
Oh, wow. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, well, I always imagined, you know, stock market, like I wasn't born with money.
Right.
That'll just be a thing I never do. Right.
Totally.
And I'm like, well, I'm not, you know, some lady with $50,000 to just give to another person to invest for me.
Yeah, so I will tell you how to do stock market. So there's a couple of options to do stock market. You're already doing stock market with your 401k.
So I feel like people always forget that.
Yeah. The difference between a 401k and what we'll call a brokerage account, which I think is how people think of the stock market, is just the laws surrounding how those accounts work. So with a 401k or any other retirement account, that's what we call a forced savings plan because you will be penalized for taking money out before retirement age. So they're forcing you to save it for your cute, adorable old self. With a brokerage account, those are the types of accounts where you can buy stocks or mutual funds or bonds or ETFs, and you can buy them and sell them and then take the cash out right away. And there's no penalty for doing that. But let's say you buy a stock at $1 and you sell it at $100, you will have to pay tax on that gain.
Okay. And then there's like the high yield money market account, which isn't investing in the stock market, right?
When you buy into a high yield money market account, that is essentially cash. That is essentially riskless. It's a savings account that's going to offer you a higher interest rate than you could get at your normal bank.
Right. At a regular bank with a regular savings account, the interest is so low. It's like 0.002%. It's so insane.
It's freaking insulting.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, it's actually insulting.
Yeah,
the interest rate because they're totally using your money. You know, that's what banks do, and they're not even giving you a good rate. But if you look, so bankrate.com is a really good resource for looking at who's paying the highest interest rates right now.
A little Googling goes a long way.
Exactly. And I think Ally has been at the top.
Yeah.
In recent years.
Yeah.
According to my research.
Yeah. Mine's 2% right now.
Lindsay's balling over
here. I feel rich every time I see that. I've got the same problem about how do you do the stock market. I mean, I know how, but I'm with you, Marie. It's kind of scary.
So the first step to doing stock market is making sure that we have enough cash on hand for emergency funds.
Yeah.
So,
don't dip into that emergency fund. How much do you have in savings?
About 20,000.
Sounds like you're there. You're at 3 to 6 months. Again, 3 to 6 months is the general rule. If 9 months helps you sleep better, you could do 9 months. And then the second thing you want to do is you want to care about retirement.
How much do you have in retirement?
25 to 30,000.
Sounds like you guys are caring a lot about retirement, so I'm happy about that. The next way that you can participate in the stock market is you can open up like a brokerage account. There's a lot of different places you could do this at. There's classics. The classic players are like Fidelity, Vanguard. Yeah. And we have some new guys on the scene, new gals on the scene. I like Betterment, betterment.com. It's very millennial forward, easy to use. Wealthfront is another great one.
Elvest is great.
And there's one. Oh, Aspiration is another player. Then what you do is you figure out, hey, how much of extra cash do I have to throw into the market? Okay, great. We have an extra $10,000 sitting in our emergency fund, more than we need. We're gonna do stock market. All right. So we open up an account and we can put all of the cash into the account right away. You don't necessarily need to buy into the stock market right away. You can buy slowly over time. This is what nerds call...
I'm so obsessed with this, Paco. Dollar cost averaging.
Bum, 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 bum!
It sounds so difficult. It is so simple.
Yeah, it's very simple. Dollar cost averaging. It's kind of like, you know, there's never a perfect analogy in finance... in the finance world, but it's kind of like if you had a bunch of money and you're like, you won the lottery and you're like, I guess I'll buy all the toilet paper today. Why would you do that? You just buy it over time. And the reason why you want to do that is because you don't want to buy everything when everything is too high priced. You want to average your cost, basically.
There goes the averaging and dollar cost averaging.
There it is.
Okay. So investing 101, Paco, walk us through it.
Disclaimer. This is not investment advice. This is merely me sharing the knowledge that I have accumulated over years of being in the industry. And also, I have a little thing called a finance degree. I have to protect myself. So think about investing as a flavor of the dish. And the flavor of the dish that we are caring about is this thing called risk, right? Because investing is all about putting money into the market and hoping that the economy does well and the companies that you're invested in does well. And you're taking a risk and you should be rewarded for that risk. Does that make sense? No? Lindsay's shaking her head.
It does make sense. I just, this is the part where I'm always like, this is so crazy.
All right. So, okay. So the way that you choose the amount of risk is based on when you need the money. So you do have to do that. Like, let's pause and think about what the hell this 10 grand is for. Is it going to be for a baby that you're planning to have in 5 years? Is it for a new business you want to start in 11 years? Is it for a college fund possibly in 25 years.
I really love the idea of investing with a goal in mind. I think that it makes it seem a lot more manageable.
The rule of thumb is like anything you need between like tomorrow and a few years, you probably shouldn't invest it. When I worked at a financial planning firm and we had clients come in, we're like, we're not moving forward until you tell us what this is for. Because if we lose it all, and they were like, well, we needed that in 12 days. You're like, bro, come on. You didn't tell us that.
Right. And luckily, all of these platforms like Vanguard or Alvest can help you manage your brokerage accounts based on the amount of risk you want to take.
And they're going to ask you, like, how much risk can you tolerate? It's called a risk tolerance questionnaire. We're not very creative in the finance industry, but they want to know, like, you know, can you put it all on black and let it ride? Or are you more like, I'm going to go to the penny slots kind of a person? So they're going to balance out what you can tolerate in terms of risk with when you need the money.
These should all be long-term goals. That's why you need that emergency fund.
Exactly.
And is it true that you should be prepared to lose it all, depending on the risk that you choose?
Oh, man. Well, listen, if you go in and you dump everything into like a crazy, risky investment, like, you know, some kind of technology that's brand new that we've never heard of, and you put it all into one stock, into one company, there's a chance that you can risk it. So the name of the game is diversification. Diversification is basically not putting all your eggs in one basket. It's kind of like the only thing that everyone in the finance industry has agreed on that works. So yes, it's possible to lose it all, but according to the data and the fact that like the economy is still going and everything's still humming along, you're good to go. And the name of the game is also return over time.
Yeah, not to think that you're going to make all the money tomorrow.
Right.
And you already have a diverse portfolio if you think about it, Maria. You've got your retirement accounts, you've got the home that you own, you've got an emergency fund. So adding an investment brokerage account on top of it is just further diversifying your money.
Boom.
I will say that you need to be careful and not watch it too carefully. You
right.
have to remember that this is a long-term goal. And if you're watching every dime, you know, disappear or come back, it can be a little crazy making.
That makes sense.
So how do you feel now that we've just given you a dense sandwich of information?
Well, that's helpful because to hear you say it like it's just a casual thing. Yeah, I could put $5,000 or $10,000 on a stock website and play around with it.
You could even do $20 a month.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't realize that it was so easy to break into or just to try. Like you say, $20 a month. We'll look into that together. Maybe try a couple different platforms and be like, I like this one the best.
There it is.
Thanks so much for calling in today. It was great chatting with you. This was really fun.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
So I'm really impressed with Maria.
Yeah, she is really incredible. She actually has her financial ducks in a row. You know, she's got that emergency fund, the good salary, they own their home.
Totally.
They're investing in their retirement funds.
Yep.
So like it's time.
Yeah, totally. It's all starting to compound on itself and the foundation of the pyramid is set. So it's time to, you know, get crazy.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want to read an interview with today's anonymous caller, head on over to refinery29.com/money-diary.
And if you like this episode, please go to wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. While you're at it, rate us and leave a comment. Let us know what you think. This episode was produced by Jessica Chow and Jay Brunson.
Our editor is Alvaro Ceballos.
Our head of post-production was Stacey Scripter.
And we recorded at Argo Studios with Paul Rest.
I'm your co-host, Paco De Leon.
And I'm your co-host, Lindsay Stanberry, Work and Money Director at Refinery29. And I spend $90 a week on private Pilates sessions, and it's worth every single penny.
Ooh, oh! Nailed it!